Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
And the reason that's a road, there's all sorts of, I respect every path that a person weaves together for themselves.
Okay.
But I hear people a lot say, well, hoodoo isn't a religion. It's a tradition. It's a way of life. Well, that's how you live it. It's my religion. And to me, whether you believe in Christ or not, watch what I do. I need thee. When I call myself Lord, because there's some of us who believe I am God.
Yes.
That we are God. So when you're saying I need thee, I'm calling on my highest self.
Yes.
I need thee. Oh, I need thee. Not tomorrow, not yesterday, not just right now, but every hour I need. Bless me now, my Savior, because I'm saving myself.
Yeah.
I come at the stage that I'm at to thee, to my highest. Because when you align with all versions of yourself at your highest peak, anything that comes stops you. You're undeniable. It opens roads. Natural.
So you use the hymns, obviously. And do you use the Psalms as well? Do you use them interchangeably? Or do you find the Psalms is like your main
message? I literally use the Psalms. I want to say 6 years ago, I made some lip balm in my store. And they were called prayer balm instead of prayer psalms. It was Isaiah 55:11, which as I said earlier,
yeah,
the word will depart from my mouth and not return
void. Yeah.
So I used to make those so that when people sat in meditation, because meditation to me is not just talking to God, but listening to God. So when I'm praying, then I got to stop talking so I can hear. I got to meditate or being able to receive whatever message. And the prayer balm, I put them around and say what it is.
Yes.
Bible.
I love that.
Kudo is absurd.
It's an action word. And so I don't have, like, I can point out practices, maybe like many of us that have, you know, parents or grandparents from the South. So both my grandparents were from Georgia. My father's side is West Indian, but my grandmother was from Tifton, Georgia, and my grandfather was from Americus. And so there are just things that she did that now I look back and I'm like, oh, snap, that's hoodoo. Like sweeping the porch every, that's hoodoo. There was just like the numbered books by the bed.
That's hoodoo.
Divination.
That's hoodoo. I watch them numbers because them numbers always going to tell me stuff.
I wish I could get my hands. My grandparents had so many of those books around the house. Like, oh my gosh, the old school dream. I mean, we grew up with that, like
big red
on the bed. I mean, on the nightstand. So when they woke up, they just reach over. The dream book is right next to the Bible.
Exactly. Think about the 27 Club. All those celebrities who died age 27.
Yeah.
2 + 7 = 9, and 9 is the number of completion.
Completion.
Their journey was complete. Malcolm Jamal Warner, 54, comes up to
9. Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting.
Hulk Hogan, 71.
8.
What is that? Karmic, you died on the same day that you ran to 10 years ago.
And the thing about 8 is it's that number of extremes. It can be like extremely good or extremely challenging.
Karmic, what goes around comes around.
Yeah.
How old was Ozzy? Okay.
Ozzy was in his 70s as well. I think Ozzy was 72, I think.
But your viewers are going to get a kick out of that little piece we just did.
What?
Oh, and we added up the numbers.
Yeah.
Now, with 54, that's 9. His cycle was completed as much as it hurt.
Yeah.
We all come here with a reason.
Yeah.
Preach funerals, I would talk to people about living your dad because you're only responsible for that line.
Yeah.
It was the end. I remember watching a movie with Liam Neeson.
Okay.
And it was a movie where an airplane crashed into a mountain and the wolves on the mountain meticulously chased each person that survived the plane.
Okay.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
what happened before each character died, a significant person in their life, back, like, showed up, they would see them, they would, and at the end of the movie, I was very choked up, and I was talking to a friend, and he was like, what did you think? I said, I just have always felt that when we pass away, when we transition, that there is someone waiting for us that went before we went to help us through the transition. And at the moment I said that, I heard my grandmother in my belly, and I'll be there with you. Every time I say that, and I've said it 100 times, and I'll be there when you go. She loved me so absolutely more than either one of my parents.
When my mother was transitioning, she started to call people that I didn't even know, like cousins from her childhood, like when she would sort of come back to herself, quote unquote. And I would be like, Mom, who is such and such that you were calling? Or I'd ask my cousin and she'd be like, oh, that's her cousin so-and-so. And so I was like, wow, that's something else. And then one day she was smiling and she was like, do you see my friend? And I was like, girl, who are you talking? There's nobody in this hospital except you and me. Who are you talking about? And she was like, the person standing over my head. And I was like, oh, okay. Nope, don't see him.
The truth of the matter, thinking about a story about a woman who, there were two stories. He worked in a nursing home.
Okay.
Screaming, crying. And the nurse came in and said, what is wrong with you? She said, oh my God, didn't you, Death? He came in the room. Death is in the room. And she said, jokingly, well, he better go and come back after my shift because I don't feel like staying doing no paperwork. And the lady was all right, her whole shift.
Okay.
She found out, well, the lady died the next shift overnight. The second story, and I saw this one online, was about a woman who lied on a boy and had him killed because she was jealous of her sister's dress. And she was crying and say, pointing in the room, in the corner. No one could see. She was describing the boy. Killed. He came back for her.
What?
Wow. That's why I try to live my life. And I think you and I discussed it briefly before, but I was telling you all of these black men were online, and not all, but a lot of them are like, F him. But we're mourning Hulk Hogan. I'm like, listen, you're going to get the life you live. I said, then nothing makes me sicker. That's like going to a church and having a funeral where the pastor's sitting up there lying about what a good person the person in the casket. You know that person wasn't good. Why are we responsible for the legacy of people who don't care enough about their legacy not to feel or think that way?
Well, let's talk about that. Because maybe there's some sort of energetic resonance, some familiarity that they see or that they're seeking. I'd love to hear what you have to say about that.
Terms of their racism?
No, I just in terms of their maleness. Because even I'm thinking about like Kevin Samuels, right? Like when Kevin Samuels passed, and you know, a lot of people were just like, right? People were just like, okay. But a lot of men were very upset at people's reaction to his passing.
Girl, I went and got me some wine. You know why? Because all the things that you said about black women.
Yeah.
And women, let's tell the truth and shame the devil.
Yeah.
It's like when I see a person complain too much about gay people, I'm like, just come out the closet. Stop being at people who did it.
Who are living openly. And you feel like you can't.
To be Kevin Samuels was one of those undercover closet people. And that's just my feelings. I'm not trying to spread anything. So keep your smoke over there. But in watching his mannerisms, watching the way that he spoke, and having been a woman who had gone to school in the village in New York City, and some of my first and favorite friends were trans when people did not know what trans was. So certain things I recognized, and there was just certain snares to Mr. Sam. And what he did for those men is he reiterated incorrectness. It did not matter whether he was right or wrong. He made them feel validated.
Yeah.
This is the illness that we suffer as humans. We need to stop looking for validation outside of ourselves. When we look for validation outside of ourselves, we're in constant want. And the Bible that these folks claim to love and read says, the Lord is my shepherd. I shall want.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime you're in want, you are not in alignment. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that this is from an intricate system. And nobody wants to break down the parts, see how it works, right? I said to someone the other day, if I had a choice between a conservative woman and a liberal white woman and a conservative white woman, guess which one I'm picking?
The conservative.
Exactly.
Obviously.
I know who she is. She's already shown me that she doesn't like my AF. And just the whole lot of us, she'd rather really do without. But what I don't like, and I'm not saying all liberal white women are like this, because they're not. There's some who actually
mm-hmm.
are, I don't even want to say allies, but they, because I hate that word now.
Yeah, but I like co-conspirators. I like that.
I like that too. They're the ones who raise children, teach them that this is how you think about people of other races, of other cultures. They don't teach their children, hey, be respectful and meet people and learn who they are. Like, there are certain indicators for me to tell me right away, you're racist as hell. If a person says to me, I don't see color.
In 2025.
Girl, the first thing I'll say is, how do you stop the traffic light? Because you tell me you don't see my color is dismissive. Because I was always going to be black. Even before they knew I was going to be female, they knew I was going to be black.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to miss the most important thing about it. It's just like when I was trying to educate a few people and I'm like, don't tell me that you're white. Because that's a social construct created in the 1600s to create a legal caste system. What is your culture? Because even people who identify as black will tell you after that, yeah, I'm African-American, I'm Caribbean-American, I'm from Haiti, I'm from the Dominican Republic, I'm from Africa, I'm from Nigeria. They will tell you where their culture is from. And I keep telling people who identify as white, the problem with that, what are you? When people say you have no culture, this is why they say it, because you have traded in your culture for an emperor's set of clothes, for a crown that doesn't fit. So when we talk about why people think about it, it's all locked in to this intricate system of racism and its proximity to white.
One of the books that I love is The Great Cosmic Mother. In that book, the writers talk about the ways that European was colonized out of their paganism, out of their indigenous practices, the worship of the mother, and how that has impacted us. I also love how she talks about how they took midwifery away and all of the jobs that were done by women is somehow, or all of the things that women did was associated with devilment. But when the men do it, it's different. So I want to talk about these intersections, right? Because you walk with a couple of different intersections. So you walk with Paulo Mayombe. And for folks who don't understand the distinctions or the intersections, can you talk about how you honor both of those paths and how they feed into your culture? Mm-hmm.
I have a very intense relationship with emotion. Let's break down the word because I love etymology. Emit emotion. It is not just saying, it is doing. And I'm fascinated by the fact that when people transition, where does that spirit go?
Mm.
We've been taught in this realm that when people die, they're just gone. And that is not true. I'm sure in your experience, since your mother is gone, she's showing up. Little babe to tap you on the shoulder. Say, hey, remember when we did this? Like, whenever I see a peacock feather, I smile because I feel like my grandma's around. And by the globe. Because when I was 10, and she asked me, what do you want for your birthday? Oh, wow, it's so fast. All the little pinpoints, all over this round ball, big places. So whenever a globe shows up, I know she's around. It's not dissipated. It's transferred from one point to another. You know, my son was proof positive of that. And here we go with numbers. You ready? My brother was born August 17, 1969.
Okay.
He died July 19, 1991.
Okay.
My grandmother, my mother's mother, died July 19, 1972. Same day. 19 years apart.
Wow.
I turned to my mother and said, she came back. I mourned my brother so much because my mother had four kids. So it was always two older sisters and me and my brother. And when it seemed like everybody else had gone back to their lives, I couldn't. It was just my best friend. And I mourned him until he returned on August 1st, 1996. You see how the numbers trend? So when I shared this with my mother, my son, my brother, returned. And people always say, y'all argue like brother and sister. And she said, well, your son was born on the 1st. My son was born on the 17th. So where's the 7th? So that's easy. Elijah is the 7 light path.
Does she know what you're talking about when you said that?
I always break it down.
Okay.
So that, you know, she doesn't fully understand it. But she knows. She knows I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So for folks who don't know what we're talking about numerology with these numbers, and it's the science of numbers, and it is the belief that the numbers carry a certain frequency, a certain energy, and a certain meaning. So when we're talking about 9, that would be a number of completion, right? Certain numbers hold very important frequencies.
So I'm just curious as to why people would, and it's so important, especially people of color.
Okay.
Learn about numbers and what they say to you. Look at the matrix. It opens up with 1s and 0s.
Yeah.
Any computer system data, they speak in 1s and 0s, right?
Yeah.
So why is it that technology can speak in, which is the 1s and 0s, making their own language, creating, but we think it means nothing?
That's the way we were taught. This is a very new conversation that we're having. Historically, this is an extremely new conversation. Within the past probably 10 years, really, COVID opened up a lot for people metaphysically, but we were not taught this in school. This is like a very secret knowledge that only certain people had. I also think we were also, at least in the West, it's very linear. Right? Nobody was talking about numerology. I mean, I've been living this lifestyle for 31 or 32 years now. And when I first fell into this in 1993 or so, it was very few people that were having these conversations. I mean,
agreed.
Very few. And even now, if you look at like families, it's usually like one or two like weird people in the family who are having these things. We're not having these conversations. If we were having these conversations, the whole world would be different. Like, I think about that all the time. Like, if I knew about numerology, I was always into astrology from a young kid. But if we were taught that we are the temple, everything would be different. You know, I mean, now people are leaving the church, but I mean, for me, I was raised by boomers. So,
same.
Right. So it's just like everything outside of Jesus was the devil.
Well, that's what I wanted to introduce. And since the last time we spoke, I started doing my paperwork for my own church.
Mm-hmm.
The church teaching people about foraging, how to, what herbs to get, how to use certain herbs to, you know, what works to pull certain things off of you, what to work to lift your energy and spirit out of the swamps of depression. So also going through the Bible in a voodoo way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
what does that mean to you specifically? Like, I know what it means for me, but what does that mean to you to use the Bible in a voodoo way?
Okay. Let's take the story where the Israelites were in the desert and they create a place of worship and they had the inner court, right? Where you had to be consecrated for 3 days before going in to the inner court, right? And they always tied something around your ankle with bells.
Mm.
If the bell stopped ringing, they assumed it had fallen down because you were in the presence of, what is it, the Holy Grail. All right. Now, the Holy Grail was known to be a chalice. The chalice is shaped like the back of our head. Our shoulders are the base of the cup, our spine right here up at the bottom, mm-hmm. and the goblet is the shape of our head.
Sure.
Our pituitary gland, or our Holy Grail, is right in the midst of that. The hoodoo way of looking at that, when you allow people, they need to be consecrated. They need to understand your truth, your alignment, your greatness. Not everybody should have access to your inner court. Everybody is not anointed to be before your Holy Grail or to sit from your cup. And when you are resolute and strong in your understanding, in your Holy Grail, in your pituitary gland, when someone cannot, they walk before you and they come with their garbage and try to infect with their garbage, just like in the story, they fall down dead. You know how, and Zoe, you know what I'm talking about. People who thought they could manipulate you or play with you, and you showed them with your brilliance to go play with their mama, but not with you. Try Jesus, don't try me.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do, they departed from you because they knew you.
Mm-hmm.
That's the hoodoo way. The hoodoo way, there's more than, for me, mm-hmm. how I, because there'll be other hoodoo people getting like, that's not hoodoo well. It. The hoodoo way for me said there are many. Hoodoo way is Jesus is the concept because his last name is Christ, right? Which means the anointed. And when you are the anointed one, you don't need anyone else's validation. You do your perfected work in showing people how they can reach your level by being in their perfect work. You don't look for things outside of yourself to make. Or now, don't misunderstand. No man is an island. This means, you know how the Bible says, not forsaking the fellowship. The fellowship is important. Yes, we have times where we're by ourselves. Yes, we have times where we focus and we go into our hermit stage. But you got to come back out. Because the way people like you and me are fed in hooding tradition, though, is we keep blessing. When their heart singing, when their mouth can't, I need you, I need. And we show up, not as their God, but as a tool used by their God, which is their higher self, to help them reach and obtain their grace.
Got it. So let's shift to this grief conversation, sort of within what we've been talking about so far. So you and I have both walked with grief, not just personally, but like you're saying, professionally, spiritually, communally. How do you see grief showing up in our community?
I don't think grief shows up in our community. I think grief lives in our community. And I think we learn how to compartmentalize and give grief respect for its place in our community. And I think so much, we don't want to be accountable for that portion of grief. Grief doesn't just come to death. So I know that's what you're talking about, but those little deaths that we have every day prepare us for great loss in the grief that we are talking.
Well, when I say how does it show up, I mean, how do you see it? Like, how is it manifesting itself?
So how do you see
that happening?
I see it happening in unjust grief. I see it happening in the death of the relationship between Black men and Black women. I see it in the death of the relationship between Black women and Black women. Mm-hmm. I see it in the death of expression.
Say more about that.
The death of expression. One of the worst things someone hear you. Mm-hmm. Your voice stolen from everything and everyone around you. Sometimes you get tired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like that saying that stop talking to keep peace, but it didn't stop the war inside.
And I stopped talking to keep the peace, but it didn't stop the war inside. Yeah, I feel like we see that a lot, or I should say I've seen that a lot with elders when they just go silent, but you know something's going on.
I've learned in grief, whatever the grief is.
Yes.
I wrap my hands around myself, and I've learned how to embrace it completely and fully.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell myself that I am enough mm-hmm. to be enough
mm-hmm.
for all versions.
For all versions. So when you were saying that we need to make a place for the grief because it's alive, that entails accepting all versions of ourselves?
Because they're versions of Renee that has done less than stellar in survival. And I want to say this to her, and I want you to forget saying it this way. But bitch, thank you, because it wasn't easy. But you did what you needed to do so that I can survive into the next. Mm-hmm. Literally, and this is what we don't understand as humans, there comes a time in your life, and I'm not just talking about a physical death, when your parents pick you up for the very last time, when they stop parenting in the way of teaching. If you have to learn how to parent. There were times I made decisions that on the outside, it was like, bitch, what are you doing?
Yeah.
But that was the mother in me protecting the child in
me. Mm.
Like, you were caught in an array of bullets and you had your child. The first thing you're going to do is throw your body in the way to keep your child safe.
Yeah.
And being a victim of sexual abuse,
mm-hmm.
I put my body in the way of those bullets.
Mm-hmm.
Protect the little girl.
Mm-hmm.
If that little girl needs something, right? For me, when it comes to dealing, I love arms. I just fucking adore arms. And the stronger, the better.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't always feel things.
Mm-hmm.
A younger, uneducated Renee gave whatever she needed to give so that she could have those arms. In hindsight, not great, but I'm grateful to her, grateful to Renee for giving what she needed to give so that Pumpkin could get what she needed to get.
Got it.
That's a grief in and of itself.
Mm-hmm. It is. I mean, there's a grief in, like you were saying, when your parents are able to parent you anymore. There's a grief in that when it's like, oh, I'm not going to get the apologies that I wanted from my parents. I'm just never going to get that, especially if they have like dementia or something like my mom wound up having. There just comes a point where it's like, okay, I'm not going to ever get it. I've just got to move on. So there is a grief in that as well.
But you know what's so wonderful?
Yeah.
This tradition. Or DH tradition.
Yes. Yes.
Is that you start to open your mind to the extraordinary. And when you do, you'll get those apologies.
Yes.
They will show up through another voice.
Yeah.
And they will show up in another way.
Yes.
Just like we talked about, I hate to go back to old boy Hulk Hogan dying 10 years to the day it shows up that you owe it, everybody gonna pay the piper. And everybody paid the piper. Everybody get their just desserts, which is another reader, a writer, if you've never read her, phenomenal. I hate that she passed, but we all transitioned. Jay California Cooper.
Oh, Jay California Cooper.
Honey, one of her books, I don't know if it was Search of Satisfaction or The Week of the Queen, but in one of those books, everyone got their just dessert. Even the characters you love.
Yeah.
That was the first book I read and learned that you could get pregnant with twins from two different men because one of the characters in the book, in fact, it's real, looked it up. And then there was a character, everything he could save his daughter, he killed. And in the end, he ended up losing his life because guess what? Everybody has to pay the piper. The only thing I have, I work real hard to be good and decent to other people to remember as good to a thing as I am to others. Because I truly believe that we pay for the way that we see ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And we do get, though, well, I will say I definitely got my apologies once they transitioned. Again, because of the traditions, because of the system, because of setting up an altar and tending to it and creating a space to facilitate that conversation. And as you said, the openness as well that these traditions afford us. So how do you think hoodoo meets grief? Are there like, do you think there are herbs that people can take for grief? Like, what do you think about that?
Like, I do black walnut bath. Black walnut bath is good for the separation. It's good for cutting ties. It's good for that sort of thing. So it's helpful in that way. Absolutely. I also have a bath that I create. And everybody that has that bath, everybody loves it. It's called Grandma's Hand.
Called what?
Grandma's Hand.
Okay.
Like Grandma's Hand.
Yeah.
Clap the church on Sunday morning.
Yeah.
And the reason why I called it that, because it smells tuberose.
Oh, tuberose.
And it is herbs that wrap around like lavender.
Yeah.
Which is calm. Yeah. Roses, which are.
Yeah.
Hyssop. The Bible says, wash me through and through with hyssop, and I will be clean.
Yes.
I remember being a child. And being a tomboy and hated taking baths. I just wanted to run and rip and run and roll around Harlem. And my grandmother would run the tub and put my ass in it and scrub me down. Because there was nothing like grandma.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain smells that, for me, set off that memory. Like Gina.
Oh, my goodness.
So grandma's hand is a labor of love. I've got some honey-scented flowers in that. I'm skipping my mind what they are right now, but, you know, I got a nice bit of herb, and I make sure to put cascarilla in it. So anything that's on you can be broken. So before doing that bath, when I'm working with clients, take an egg, a whole egg, and run it over them. Then I place that in a glass bowl. Like, chances are I'm in the bathroom, in a glass bowl, and have them rub down in some soap, possibly ivory or like the borax soap, or I give them that blue soap and have them scrub down, right? Mm-hmm. Get your body clean.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're going to submerge you into a bath, grandma's hand.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you've never experienced it, you know you're being held by grandma's hand. And I know this because my best friend, I've never called him white. He's Italian. Call him white appearing. And he told me, Renee, I'm a white man. I said, you cosplaying a white man. But that's a whole nother story. One day he was going through something and Spirit told me, give him the bath. He's not emotional like that. We talk on the way into work and on the way going home.
Okay.
And on the way going home, he held the bath in his hand the entire time.
So what kind of people come to you for services?
All kinds. I know you're going to say that.
All kinds, all races, all creeds, all colors.
What kind of things do people come to you for?
People come to me to lift things off them.
Okay.
People come to me to open roads. People come to me to bring money.
Okay.
Their job. I had an oil named Richie Rich that hit every single out of work 3-4 years. Use the Richie Rich, go work and get the job.
Yeah.
Every single time.
Yes. I used to have one that I made called I hate to even say it now, but it used to be called Dirty Sexy Money.
That's cute.
Yeah.
Say that. That
because that was the name of Diddy's group, Dirty Money. So that's where it was like associated with. Because his group was Dirty Money and mine was Sexy Money.
And guess what? It was not what you thought it was back then. So it's not tainted here.
Yes. Yeah. Truly.
Like I had the oil called My Way, right? And My Way was the oil you wore when you wanted certain things to happen for you.
Yeah.
Your way.
Yeah.
Everybody had a Jezebel oil. Yeah. Right?
Oh, I got my Jezebel root, right? I got my Jezebel root.
Would you like to know the name of my oil?
Want it?
The name of my oil was the Delilah oil.
Oh, yes. Come on, Delilah.
The reason being, I said, now, I don't know much about Jezebel. I know about that.
Yeah.
But what I know about Delilah, you know she that bitch.
Oh, 100%.
Done did what she did. He told her a lie, and the men came in after her. A man was said to be like, you can't do this, let me leave you alone. Then he turned around and told her the truth. I want what
Delilah got. Period.
So I made a Delilah oil.
I love it.
We were working at the airport. I got this job. It was a temp job where we go to the airport, we help people off the plane and take them to the bus that takes them to their place.
Okay.
So we're there, and my mother's working with me that Saturday. She's like, oh, my God, what is that smell? I said, I smell new oil. She goes, what is it called? I said, Delilah. She convinced Samson to tell her the truth after he told her a lie and called this man his life. Then she pretty pumped. She said, well, I want this, because I had a couple of new products. And I don't know why I had them at the job with me. Probably because I knew my mother was more big. She lived in a different place. So.
Okay.
And so she was like, oh, my God, everything smells so good, but I want it. And she said, I said, you want it? I said, you can buy it. She said, well, I'm your mother. What are you going to charge me?
Yeah.
$173. She said,
oh, no.
She said, well, what you charging everybody else? I said, $173.
Oh, no.
Said, I'm your mother. I said, and this is a business. You ain't too far going to see that yet.
You know, let me give credit to where I get that line from. My favorite actor, and even though I loved it in Prince, I always loved Prince, Purple Rain, my favorite character was the club owner. Oh. Yeah, he told Prince, he said, this is a business. You ain't too far going to see that yet. Go to the bathroom. This guy walks by us. He must have been African royalty. Said, who is that? He said, that's my mother. That is your mother. Yeah. She is trying to buy something open. And you do not give it to your mother. I said, it's very different here in America. The product that I bought and the amount of money I spent on them, I can't give her free product because then I won't be able to make it. He said, what is her bid? I said, $173. He gave me $200 and told me to keep the change. I put her shit in the bag. And when she came out the bathroom, I put it in her hand. She goes, what is this? I said, your style. She said, what do you mean, my style? I said, the African dude over there. Boy. She said, what do you do that for? I said, because I'll put it on you. I'll put some on you. You're wearing the light.
Yeah, that's
so it works.
Yeah, I love it. Thank you for that.
Absolutely.
So are you still making the oils or no?
I am. I took a little bit of a break. Yeah. Just graduated from college, getting ready to revamp my page to show the living group. Ministry. I'm also going to have a section on the website called The Geechee Stove.
Okay.
So you can go to The Geechee Stove and you can get your soap. And I'm in the process right now of creating my own Oracle deck.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. So I'm making one Oracle deck and I'm making one tarot deck. And the Oracle deck is the Geechee Gao variant, which is Oracle. It just tells you, like, the truth ain't it. You, like, it has all of these wonderful Geechee Gullah sayings that are synonymous with hoodoo. My mother used to say all the time, fun don't shine and fang dogs behind all the time.
So again, for people who are listening, what is Geechee Gullah? For people who may not know.
So the Gullah and Geechee tradition are people who come from West Africa, like Nigeria, Benin, like my family comes from Benin. And they're settled along the north coast of America. So it starts from North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, and Florida. And these people generally live off the barrier islands of states. Now, of course, now they, you know, migrated, but they were a group of people who were able to keep most of the African tradition because when nightfall came, those white folks were terrified to be in those swamplands. You got your mosquitoes, you got your gators, you got all these things that these folks were afraid of. So these people were able to live a lot freer.
And I went to, where did we go? Well, our home base was in Savannah. And then we would drive to the different islands, like, every day. And one of them, you had to take a ferry. Several of them, you have to take a ferry. And we went on a whole, like, walk through where the folks lived, where they still made baskets, where, I mean, honestly, it was like when we got off the ferry and we looked at the folks, like, everybody pretty much on the island was related. We could have been in Nigeria.
Yep.
Yeah, so that was dope to see that. Moving on to your work as a death doula or a person who sits at the threshold witnessing people's final breaths, is there anything that witnessing death has taught you about life?
Fragility of life. I think we are taught, especially as Black women, so strong that we forget the fragile parts of us. We learn how to shatter ourselves. And birth and death command a respect of the fragility of life. Witnessing death has shown me, that is truly, it brings a tear to my eye. But you know how you got everybody, I'm in my soft girl era. No, you are quite in your soft girl era. You're in your relaxed girl era. Your soft girl era, and this is from what I've observed, because I don't want to take anything away from anyone or anyone. I'm not doing that. Because most people, everybody gets so emotionally broken when you go against something that they're... Soft girl era to me is see somebody near death. Things change. Their hands soft. Their face gets softer. I'm talking about people.
Okay.
As the body prepares to go, it just feels different. My mother kissed me and touched my face right before I went to tell her to drop my son off. He had moved to. And all I could think for the next 3 weeks driving down was, so soft. She's such a hard woman. Touch of her, her hands, her face is so soft. As we grow older, and we fall up layers, peel from us, whether we realize it or not. So when we start understanding the reality, what death is always taking. Death comes every day. When we lay down and go to sleep, we put breath every day. There's a higher power that brings more into it. So we are reading and and this world that we live in today has opened up our understanding of how to elongate our lives. So we give up the ghost sooner than we ever anticipated.
Interesting. So how does the work change when you're sitting with the people who are transitioning? Do you feel like it's, or do you feel like your work is louder, or does it just depend on who you're with?
I think it depends on who I'm with. And I will wonderfully and greatly quiet.
Yeah.
Because I think people talk. And I know I talk a lot, but in those moments, I had a friend, and we're no longer friends, unfortunately, because whatever her mental psychosis is. But we were being scratched in Palo Mayo.
Okay.
Me, that was a very spiritual moment. I didn't talk. I didn't want to have chatter. I just wanted to honor the sacredness of the moment. Palo Mayombe, you are surrendering. You are offering yourself up. And they are scratching, taking blood and giving to the pot for protection. It's an honoring and a relationship with the dead. It is an honor and respect that I'm talking about. Or giving grief its role, whether you honor it or not. This is one of the reasons I love Harry Potter, where they tell you about the Sorcerer's Stone, the cloak, and the wand. And at the end, they talk about the person who meets with death as though it were an old friend.
Huh.
Because death says, now let me hold that. You carry that. Not final.
Well, not final, but like of this life, it's final because I'm not going to be this Zoe. So I'm going to be, are you saying like handed over to people? You can't see me. I'm motioning. I just keep motioning to Renee, like giving something because this is what I'm hearing you're saying. It's like that, like when my mom was passing, like the last thing she did, she took like those last six breaths.
What does the Bible say? We give up the ghost.
So what is the ghost in your opinion?
The ghost is spirit that animates your soul.
So we're giving it up.
We're giving up the ghost. Mm-hmm. The spirit that haunts your body for the amount of years that you occupy space on this earth. When you give up the ghost, when you release for the last time, the meat drops and that spirit goes out.
Yeah. And I feel like we talked about this, like what grief has taught you. I feel like we've definitely talked about that. So at this point, what are you grieving, if anything, and what are you grateful for?
I'm grieving the thing that I'm too late.
I get that so much. I get that.
You know, to lie to ourselves and say, you're never late. There are certain things that if I had known beforehand, I'd not be in place. I wish that my body was as ferocious, brilliant, and now I've got to undo as much of the damage I can do. I took for granted that I don't take for granted that we are forever.
Yeah. And what are you grateful for?
I'm grateful for my mom. Just when I think I can't do another thing, here's another hyphen.
Yeah.
I'm grateful I'm my daughter. I'm grateful that even though I fight with depression all the time, because that was an easy to, I'm so full with the lives of my clients, friends, everyone. That sometimes I cry. I miss a life that I could have had. Well, I feel like when you're in this position, you give so much. Like I told all the time, oh, you're so beautiful, you're so this, you're so that. My life is not like that. My life is one that works. Third. Who's the woman that? So I'm grateful for my, but I mourn the losses in my life, fully happy or living around, because every semblance of something that came into my life that like it was going to be something, spirit had me put on the altar and sacrifice, because it was like my job here. And I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm 51 now in my latter year. The man I'm supposed to you know, come along. My tribe will come along. I'd be able to foster mother and children. I don't know. But I pray that for the rest of my life. That good word, good and faithful servant. Let me sing something for you.
I love that. May it be so.
Yes.
May it be so. I did a new moon ritual last night for my coven I'm a part of. And I had my shaker ray. Here's my stick. I got my stick. They made me a stick. So may it be so.
I love it. May it be so.
May it be so. It's already done on another plane. But we want it in present time, in this plane, with grace and in perfect ways.
Absolutely. Well, one of the things I'm realizing is with wisdom and understanding comes a bit of crazy. I'm trying to look for a good word for that. But
I know. Yeah.
I understand that I'm spiritually neurodivergent, that I am going to see and look at things different so I can obtain and never
will. Yeah. And how can people support your perfect work?
Okay. So my main page, I'm always on Facebook, which is Renee Michelle with one L.
Okay.
And an accent above the second in Renee.
We'll put that in the show notes for you folks.
Now, every other platform is Peachy Gal Ruth. The name of my business, that's TikTok. That's on Instagram. That's on Blue Sky. My YouTube, I got to update. But if you want to find me on YouTube, it's Mother Metaphor.
Okay.
I also have 2 books on Amazon under Renee Michelle, Mother Metaphor. You can find them.
All right. My candles are burning like crazy. That's why I'm looking over. I'll show it to you once we get off the call. It's crazy what's happening over here. So,
a good candle will tell a story, honey. And it's funny to say that because my niece was staying with me for a little while, and she had picked me up one time so bad.
Uh-huh.
Candles picked up my energy, and the top of the glass just sliced off and fell.
Huh. Mm-hmm. So interesting. This is very interesting what's happening.
There's a lot of spiritual energy around right now. What happens is when that happens, 2 or more together, spirits are going to be in the midst. Look at their teaching the Bible at hoodoo. So those spirits know that we are talking about African spirituality in all of its ways, and it's showing up for rooms that it can be blessed. And I'm excited that you just scratched your right palm. Put that in your
choice.
Hoodoo.
Hoodoo. I mean, the thing about hoodoo and astrology for me, and it goes back to this conversation about, man, if I had known this, my whole life would have been so different. But to be able to work with the Bible, to work with the Psalms, to work with the things that saved our ancestors. It's the most natural thing, I think, in so many ways. And there were so many years that I moved away from the church. I put my Bible away because I was just like, the sexism, the this, the that. You know, I was in my 20s and I was just like mad, you know. But coming to hoodoo has allowed me to look at the Bible as a book of incantations.
Oh, it definitely is.
That is. Well, beds to be
Everybody knows what Proverbs does. Does people understand Deuteronomy? Like there, just like there's a book of blessings, there's a book of curses. So, I mean, the Bible can be applied so many different ways. The issue that most people have is that they're so used to holding on to things the way that they understand them, that they can't learn it the way one of the first book. And sometimes to learn, you have to go out all the time. You have to go outside your comfort zone.
Yes.
I remember when I first learned about manifesting stuff.
Yes.
I remember everybody was talking about The Secret. I was like, The Secret ain't shit. Go get the writings of Florence Scovel Shedd.
Oh, come on now. Stop it. Don't you talk about my girl.
You know that book was written in the 30s.
Oh, I listen to Florence Scovel Shedd almost every night. I go to sleep with her.
I got that book. The first time I got that book, I was 26 years old.
Come on. Exactly.
I'm going through my first divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And I read a story in there about a woman who cried because her husband had left her.
Yes.
Then told her to set the table for him
every night. Come on. Come on, Renee.
until he walked back in. This is how I understood and learned about manifesting.
Yes.
And I learned about prayer. It was from Rabbi Levy.
Uh-huh.
I forget her first name.
Okay.
She had such an excellent book. I'll send it to you. And it was a book of prayer. She's a rabbi. How profound things that you love can be found in the most obscure of places.
Yes.
And also in the places you're uncomfortable at. I have a whole nother Facebook page.
Uh-huh.
One of my pictures is of, what's his name? From The Boys. The show The Boys.
Oh, I never watched it.
Okay. The lead character, he's like an anti-Superman.
Okay.
Presents as a good guy, but low-key, he's a villain.
Okay.
So, and he's racist.
Okay.
So, I have a Facebook page where that is my profile picture, and I have a couple other pictures up from the show.
Okay.
And I have a whole other side of Facebook where I have a whole bunch of racist friends. Why do I do this, you ask? Because psychology is so interesting to me. We know how we are different. How are we? And proving my point that we are no different at all.
Mm-hmm.
That racism is a disease.
Yes.
That has infected so many people.
It is.
That if we can get out and away from that, that we're really not that different at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a disease for sure. It's a disease. Well, shout out to Florence. I love that you brought her up. There's so much of those early works from the 30s, and I 100% agree with you about The Secret. I feel like The Secret has gotten diluted over the years. When it first came out, it was when people were first starting to talk about that book and the movie What the Bleep. It just got diluted and made about something different, like, oh, you can get a boat, you can get all these things. But Florence and Neville Goddard and Abdullah, like all these people from the 1910s and the 20s and the 30s, they were throwing down those, which really are hermetic principles that they, you know, that's what they were throwing down.
I honestly believe that, to me, The Secret was the biggest waste of time. It was like a money grab for me to the people who were involved in the movie. But Scovel Shin didn't teach it about prosperity.
No.
How to deal with all levels of your life. It was phenomenal.
But her and Neville, and yeah, they weren't really, it just got diluted. And even when, because there was a behind the scenes with some of the people from The Secret, and they were saying they felt like the most important parts of the teachings were taken out. And for this prosperity, it just was totally commercialized, which is a shame because, you know, there's so much hate now around mind and prosperity thinking and all of that. And it's because of the money grab people. But, you know, New Thought and all of that stuff, at least for me, it totally changed my life. I mean, I got into it at 23 and my life is totally different. You know, it works. These things work, right?
Yes,
it's just the people come in with the money grab.
They absolutely do. And I'm ready to work it because it works.
It works. It works if you work it. Well, this has been so good. And hopefully you'll come on again. Maybe after your latest book comes out and you can come back on and we'll conversate some more.
That would be absolutely amazing.
Renee Michelle, thank you so much again.
Thank you so much for giving me my time.
Yes, of course, of course. Next week, we are going to be going even deeper with these conversations about grief and rebuilding and transition and transformation. And so please join us. New episodes drop every single Tuesday. And you can listen wherever you get your podcasts. I am Zoe Flowers, and I will see you soon. Bye.